Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for assembling here to hear about Krishna. We are supposed to talk about Krishna. Why should we talk about Krishna? Well, if we hear about Krishna, we are purified. But this morning, I'm not going to talk about Krishna directly. I'm going to talk about one famous meat eater and demon by the name of Charles Darwin. Or more accurately about his theories, or even more accurately about the deleterious effect of the theories that are currently marketed or propagated in his name. Now, why should we speak about Charles Darwin at all? We should speak about Krishna. By speaking about Krishna, we become purified. By speaking about Darwin, we don't become purified. Is that a fact? Well, Srila Prabhupada said that the more we kick out Darwin's theories, the more we advance in spiritual consciousness. How about that? So we do make advancement. Or more precisely again, we actually advancement in spiritual consciousness comes from thinking of Krishna. Manmana bhava madbhakta. There are so many injunctions to think about Krishna. But why don't we think about Krishna? Well, because we have so many other things to think about. Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nirang Santi Sahasrashaha. We have so many topics to discuss, to think about. And therefore, apashyatamatma tattvam griheshu grihamedhinam. Therefore, we do not see the truth of the self, and we simply become entangled in material existence, or specifically in family life, materialistic family life. So, we don't think of Krishna. We have other ways of thinking. We are enjoined to become Jnana Chakshu or Shastra Chakshu. Srila Prabhupada often used this term, Shastra Chakshu, seeing through Shastra. Seeing through Shastra means not just reading books, but seeing the message of Shastra through the Acharyas, how they describe it. What does it mean, seeing through Shastra? Does that mean we should hold a Bhagavad Gita in front of us, over our eyes like this? Then we wouldn't be able to see much of anything. We wouldn't even, if we hold it close to our eyes like that, we wouldn't be able to see Bhagavad Gita either. It'd be too close to see. But it means seeing through the vision, through the knowledge of Shastra. For instance, we might see a beautiful woman or a photograph of a beautiful woman, such as, who's a famous beautiful woman in the world today? Bollywood movie stars? Anyone? They're mostly South Indian. Anyone can think any beautiful women? No, everyone's afraid to say. But I actually can't think. I can think of some from the past. They're not beautiful anymore, presumably. We've heard of the Sridevi. Oh, what about Jayalalitha? She was beautiful once. I saw some old, went to someone's house and they had the TV on and some old movie. I said, is that Jayalalitha? Oh, yeah, well, that was her. She became famous for that, not for being a politician. So Jayalalitha, the chief minister of Tamil Nadu, for those of you who may not know, she was once beautiful. That was some time ago. So when we see a beautiful woman, we think, that's a beautiful woman, very nice. If we see through Shastra, we see this is another bewildered soul caught in Maya, and specifically through the agency of that beautiful body acting to catch others in Maya. So that is a completely different kind of vision. As Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita about this, Ukramantang stithang va pi bhunjanam va gunan vitam vimurha nanu paschanti paschanti jnana chakshushaha. Foolish people cannot see how the living being quits one body and takes another. But one who has the eye of knowledge can do so. Darwinism, the theories of Charles Darwin, or Neo-Darwinism, the present manifestation or development, if you can call it that, of Darwin's theories, they close the Jnana Chakshu. Then we have the Ajnana Chakshu, by which we see wrongly. We see the world in a completely different way. Srila Prabhupada, quite astonishing statement of Srila Prabhupada, that the more we kick out Darwin's theories, the more we advance in spiritual consciousness. Because Darwin's theories, they block spiritual consciousness. Now, why should I talk about this? Well, Srila Prabhupada spoke about it a lot. We're supposed to be followers of Srila Prabhupada. We have faith that Srila Prabhupada gave us Krishna consciousness in the way that we need to receive it so that we can advance in spiritual life. Understanding Krishna consciousness or hearing about Krishna consciousness is not all hearing about Krishna prema. We also have to kick out all the wrong ideas in our own mind and in the minds of others. That's why all our previous acharyas, they not only praised Krishna, but they took up the philosophical challenge of defeating whatever wrong theories were prominent in the world at that time. A perennial Purava Paksha, or opposing theory of the Vaishnavas, is that of Mayavad. That of Mayavad. Prema Pracharan or Pashanda Dalan Dui Kaj Avadhut Karen Brahman. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's stated about Avadhut, which means Nityananda Prabhu. He traveled around, not just aimlessly like a tourist, but for two specific functions. One was to preach about prema, which means Krishna prema, and to subdue the atheists. So we should know that Srila Prabhupada was very concerned with combating Darwin's theory because it's so misleading. Darwin is praised as by ordinary materialistic people as one of the greatest personalities in the history of the world. All the greatest personalities in the history of the world come from either Europe or North America, mostly from British extract. Definitely no one from Asian extract. Although Mao Zedong might get a consolation prize. So Darwin is praised that what a tremendous breakthrough after all this superstition for so many years, belief in God, and then Darwin gave us the knowledge by which we could understand that actually matter is supreme. There's no need of any God in Darwin's theories. I haven't even said what Darwin's theories are. I just presume you all know. Everyone knows, right? Anyone who's had any education. What are the principal factors in Darwin's theories? What is that? You all know. Presumably you all know. Is it life comes from life? You ever heard of that? Life comes from life? Who heard of life comes from life? One. There's a book by Srila Prabhupada. More than one. Okay. There's a book by Srila Prabhupada called Life Comes from Life. Very excited. I remember when we first got that book to distribute, we were very excited. Because it's such a challenge to the established paradigm of the way everyone thinks. And it's so scintillatingly, which is a word you probably don't know. It means like zzzz. Clear in undermining the established so-called scientific paradigm. So Darwin's theory is that life forms have evolved from simple to complex. And neo-Darwinism includes the idea of natural selection, the survival of the fittest. These were not ideas introduced by Darwin, but it's evolved. Darwin's theories have also evolved. And then we have the idea that life arises from matter, which means that there's no such thing as spiritual life, because there's no such thing as spirit. There's no such thing as life after death, because life is a product of matter in a certain state. So it all just came about. Why? Why? Well, there's no particular reason for it. It's just happened because some chemicals reacted in a certain way. And these are the philosophical implications of Darwin's theory. He didn't say all these things himself, but these are the implications of this is that, well, it just all happened by chance, is a simple way to put it. Many people who claim to believe in God, they also accept evolutionary theory. Most importantly, the Pope and his followers in the Roman Catholic Church, finding themselves outmaneuvered by Darwinistic theories, they at some point said, well, actually, we believe in it too, but still there's a God. He said it was all under, God set it in motion. He pressed the button and then everything else, or he just said the word was God and the word was with God and all that kind of thing, and then everything got into motion. But as modern atheists who are very active, particularly in the Western world, and increasingly having an influence in India among Hindus, as they point out, in Darwinistic theory, which is intimately linked, although different from Big Bang theory, there's no need for any God. If we examine logically, philosophically, of course their whole construct is not very logical or philosophical, but according to their logic, there's no need for God. A Big Bang just happens, it's a singularity. Singularity means they haven't got the faintest clue about how it could have possibly come about, but anyway it did. There was nothing, and then all of a sudden, nothing exploded. And then everything, there was a bunch of gas, and then everything cooled down a bit while it was going on expanding at the same time. And then it settled down into planets, and there were some more fireworks and explosions, and planets, separated, exploded out of the sun and cooled down and became planets. I'm not sure. I mean, there may be different theories, but this is more or less what I've picked up over the years, especially during my school years. And then it cooled down a bit, and then there became some soup called a primordial soup. No one cooked it, but it just came into being by chance. And some that was being zapped by sunshine. Although this theory is out of date, that's what I was taught at school, that the in the primordial soup, all kinds of chemicals were there, was being zapped by highly infrared light, and some amino acids formed. Then the amino acids got together, and they became cells, and then one cell said to another cell, hey honey, let's get together. And then they joined together and became more complex cells. And some of them turned into fish. And then some of the fish got washed up on the shore and grew legs all of a sudden. And then, not all of a sudden, this all happened over many, many years by mutations, genetic mutations. And then some of the lizards turned into monkeys. And then some of the monkeys saw that the best fruits were on the higher branches of the tree, so they stood up to reach them. And they got an evolutionary advantage because they got the better fruits, and so they remained standing on two legs, and they became prototype human beings. And then a few generations later came Charles Darwin and Homo sapiens sapiens. So this is an overview of evolutionary theory, as I've understood it. And probably modern evolutionists would say, well, that's not a very accurate representation, but that's what I, as an average layman, was indoctrinated with. So the atheists, they love Chad. What a great personality. They praise him for the very same reason that Srila Prabhupada lambasted him. For his theories, because they appear to someone has all the qualities of tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya, someone who's willing in a humble mood to accept Darwin's theory, to bow down at the lotus feet of Charles's leather shoes, and inquire submissively and partake in the whole evolutionary bamboozlement, then they can understand how actually everything is simply there's nothing but matter. Only matter exists. So Srila Prabhupada lambasted this because, as you'll find if you read that book, Life Comes From Life, which I highly recommend that you all read repeatedly, Srila Prabhupada, just by posing some simple questions, pointed out severe problems in this theory. And one thing I've always asked, at what point does life enter? And where does one set of chemical, where this survival of the fittest, why should a group of chemicals desire to survive in their present form? If it's only chemicals, where does the impetus come to survive in their present form? This is a somewhat complex combination of chemicals made by design, not by accident. This is a good spoof for the Big Bang Theory, which I often say. Actually, you don't have to have anything as complex as this. This is what I usually use to give a good idea of why Big Bang Theory is nonsense. Okay, have a good look as well as you can from the distance. Fits nicely on this. So, where did I get this from? Any guesses? Probably from a shop in India, or maybe in Little India. No, more likely in India, because I spend a lot more time in India than in Little India. Well, you're wrong. Actually, I was just sitting in a room, and in the backyard outside there was an explosion. And I went after it. I went out to see what had happened, and I saw that all the garbage that was in the back, which had just exploded spontaneously, had formed into this. And it all fits perfectly. Okay. Big Bang Theory thrown out. This is not very complex. It's somewhat complex. I mean, you have to... So much research has gone into finding out what kind of steel and what thickness of steel should be made so that it's stainless steel, so that it's sufficiently strong so that when I go like this, it doesn't crumple. And at the same time, it's not overly heavy, more than needed. It's designed in such a way that it's perfectly round. Of course, if you look at the microscopic level, you might find it's not exactly perfect, but for our purposes it is. And the cover of it goes on just nicely, just fits nicely. So it's not too tight and not too loose either. Now, to get that, then you have to find the iron, how to extract the iron ore, the technology to smelt iron with a certain amount of carbon, how to extract the carbon, the quality to make stainless steel. So much research and intelligence went into making this. And then, is it economic to market it? And then getting distributors, shipping it here and there, and how everyone along the line makes their profit, and so on and so on. There's maybe thousands of people, and their intelligence has been involved in making this. It didn't actually come from an explosion. So this is extremely, it's quite, if you start thinking about it, it's quite complex, but compared to the universe or even one cell within our body, it's extremely simple. So the idea that everything, this order of the universe that we see came into being simply by chance is a very, very poor theory. There are about 24 physical constants which are all according to the scientists' own evaluation, they're all extremely unlikely. They require certain conditions, they say, to come. Just like there's the gravitational constant and the electromagnetic constant and Hubble's this and that, so many constants, which are required for the universe to exist as we know it, according to the way we know it, because we just see it the way through what we've extrapolated through our mind and senses. So each one of these, the probability of that existing in its extremely fine-tuned state is something like 10 to the power of minus 20,000 or say, all impossible. And then if you put 24 or so together, it becomes impossibly, 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 go up to 24, impossible. So what's the solution for this? Well, according to Stephen Hawking, who is trying to cook up a reputation for himself as being the latest Galileo, he says he puts it down to the anthropic principle, which if you take out all the scientific mumbo-jumbo, it means that, well, we're here, so it must have happened. Even though the possibility of this, of all these, of the universe coming to being into being by chance, it's zero by probability, or 10 to the minus, well, it's not literally zero, it's like something like 10 to the minus, 10 to the power of minus, and then you can put a string of numbers. If you put it at 10-point size, it'll go up to the moon and back. Depending on, anyway, even if you take the moon to be only 220 or 240,000 miles away. So it's practically zero, but according to the anthropic principle, well, we're here now, so it must have happened, which is not science and is not philosophy, but it's just denying that there can be any transcendental cause. That's what it amounts to. It's a very poor, and actually the man's supposed to be intelligent and he should realize that he's actually just cheating people by saying this. Because in any other field, if the statistics are so strongly against the probability of anything happen, then you just call it impossible, that's all. And then never mind statistics, just common sense. So he's just attached to his theory, and he speaks with very great confidence, the anthropic principle, and this and that. And people take it to be scientific, but it's not at all scientific. It's actually the opposite of science, but they don't want to accept the possibility, even the possibility that there is or could be a transcendental cause, a cause that is beyond what we as human beings on this tiny little planet in a blip in time can surmise. So Srila Prabhupada is very much against this cheating of the scientists. And on the other hand, you have Christian creationists, Muslim creationists. Christian creationists mostly say that the world came into being 5,500 years ago. Dinosaur bones, then how are they there? God put them there to fool the scientists. So their theories are also not very scientific. And we have on both sides the very poor ideas. One that there's no transcendental cause, and another that God created the world in 7 days, although actually 6 days. But then there couldn't be, according to our understanding of what a day is, there couldn't be a day without any planets, because time is measured according to the motion of planets. And so how can you create planets in a day when there are no planets to delineate what a day is? So many questions come up, and they answer backwards and forwards. The ramifications of Darwin's theory are practically all pervading in our life, and we don't even recognize that. For instance, Freudian psychology has had a tremendous influence on the way of thinking of contemporary man. Once, a few years ago, I was in Foyle's bookshop, which is the largest bookshop in England, just round the corner from our temple in central London. And one room was set aside for a special exhibit on Freud, Sigmund Freud. Every month they have a special subject. So the whole room was full of books about Freud. And on one placard, which was placed in the room, there was a quote that even though all of Freud's theories have been discredited, still his influence is prominent in psychology. Something wrong there. All his theories are discredited. So his theories were built on the basis of Darwinism, and all the modern anthropology, geology, neuroscience, which is becoming increasingly prominent, they're all predicated on the theory that life has arisen from random interactions of matter. Some of Freud's great theories are the Oedipus complex, that every man lusts after his mother. Very strange idea. His idea of why people believe in God. He says this is directly coming from evolutionary theory, that originally man was tribal hunters before they became civilized. They were just hunting, and so in one group, in one pack there'd be one who was dominant, and he was very powerful, and he kept his sons under control. So, and he kept the women under his control also. So his sons, they kind of liked him, but they feared him. And that's where you get God. See, God the Father, you kind of like him, but you fear him also. That's the Christian God. But Freud didn't have, and I guess he didn't think that, for instance, Indian people were worth considering full humans, because the conception of God in Indian religion is quite different. God is not predominantly someone to be feared, but someone to be loved. So the idea of fearing God, which is very prominent, is especially in Protestant Christianity, in the ethos of which Freud was very much influenced by, having grown up in Central Europe. It's not part of the, what we might call the Hindu psyche. God is someone to be loved, not someone to be feared. Some fear might be there, but it's not by no means dominant. Anthropology, you'll just find statements like this. You'll find statements, even it's common in ordinary newspaper articles when they're discussing such and such a subject. They'll just say things like, you see, the tendency for this and the human tendency for this and that evolved from our ancient past. They just mention things like, it's just taken for granted that we, human life evolved from, through the tree of life, that there were monkeys and then they became humanoids and then became modern man. So it's just taken for, it's just presumed that we are like that and that Darwinian theory is correct, and we're all influenced by that. This Freudian psychology and modern psychology is extremely influential in the whole way that we think about the world. For instance, the idea of superiority complex, inferiority complex, where did that come from? We all think of that. We all think in terms of that. That came actually from Jung, Jungian philosophy. Jung was a disciple of Freud who rebelled against him and became somewhat spiritualistic. Srila Prabhupada also uses these terms, incidentally, in his writings. even the astronomy, when people, astronomers, they look out at the universe beyond, they all presume that the universe has come into being from a Big Bang. They just presume it. So Big Bang and Darwinism, they're interlinked. They're all utterly materialistic. This is materialistic. When we say that word, we think someone who's materialistic, they're interested in getting lots of money and power, especially lots of money. But in philosophy, materialism means the position that there is nothing beyond matter. There's no spiritual dimension at all. It's all simply imagination. And anything, even many of the things that we as followers of the Vedic understanding, we know that it's not spiritual. Just like ghosts, astrology, we accept these as being part of reality, but that's not spiritual. It's material, more subtle. But they reject all of these things. The materialists reject this. They only accept that there's matter as we understand it, and that's all there is. So Darwin's theory makes people extremely materialistic. And if we say there's nothing but matter, then there's no intrinsic purpose to existence. You're born, you die, and that's all. There's one, there's some combination of chemicals, and then when it dies and it's finished. Pasmi bhutasya dehasya king puna agamana obhavit. Atheism is not something new. This was the Charvak, he also said, way back, even before Buddha. He said that when the body dies, it's burned. It won't come back again. So that's it. It's all finished. You live, you die. That's all. That's all. So there's no intrinsic purpose to existence. You can give it some purpose. This is one of the main charges that the Christians who are battling it out with the atheists in America especially, they say, well, if you're an atheist, then there's no meaning to life. And so, yeah, there's meaning to life. We find meaning in friends and sports and humanitarian activities and arguing with Christians. But it's a meaning that they impose, or they... But there's no intrinsic meaning, because everything is simply a result of matter. So another idea that is very much prominent in the world is the idea of progress. We're making progress. Now we're making progress. You see, Singapore was just some jungle, and now it's progressed. We have motor cars and high-rise flats. This is progress. And we're making more progress. We're sending spacecraft out. We went to the moon. We went to Mars. And we're sending spacecraft out to find. We're getting more and more knowledge. We're making medical progress. Now we know how to treat various conditions that we don't know. So the idea that humankind is making progress by scientific and technological and advancement, increasing our knowledge and our expertise in these spheres and in other spheres, this is based on the idea that, well, by evolution, things are getting better. We're using our intelligence to make things better. Life is better. We've made more and more, say, we're making more and more gadgets, just like iPods. Many of us, we grew up, the children now of, 15 years old, they couldn't imagine how human beings could have ever existed in the age before iPods. But many of us here present, we grew up before such things existed. Although it's unimaginable how anyone, any sane, civilized person, could live without an iPod or a cell phone or whatever. So that's progress. It's become another necessity of life to have at least a cell phone or whatever they're called, mobile. So there are still some people who don't have them. They're considered unusual. Just 2-3 years ago, in England, I phoned up the passport office, because I need to get a new passport. And the person at the other end, we spoke a few minutes, and he said, well, give me your cell phone number and I'll call you back. He just presumed everyone has a cell phone. I didn't have one. So that might make me ineligible to have a passport. It's not a proper, it can't be a real British citizen unless you have a cell phone. So this whole idea that we're making progress, but as Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, this is not actually progress. He often said that you have your motor car, you're very proud of that, but the dog is running on 4 legs, you're running on 4 wheels. But your goal of life is the same. Ahara nidra bhaya maitun. Just eating, sleeping, mating and defending. There's no higher goal of life. It's not actually progress. Real progress means progress of consciousness. But this idea that we're making progress, that's it's like ingrained into our consciousness, isn't it? From the time we go to school, from the earliest age. When I was at school in England, it was very much by science, we're going to make the world a better place. A lot of people in the Western world have seen through all of this. They don't believe in it anymore. But definitely in India, the idea that we're making progress, we're going to become a great nation, we're emerging out of the darkness, that idea is there. So that all interrelates or comes from this neo-Darwinistic idea. Now, epistemologically, which means our whole approach to knowledge, this Darwinistic theories makes man the arbiter of all knowledge. You know, the idea that we can understand everything ourselves. We don't need knowledge from our higher source. Scientists are very confident. If you ask them some questions they can't answer, they say, well, we don't know yet, but we're doing research. We'll find out. They're confident that they will find the solution to everything they don't know. Eventually they will know. So the idea that knowledge is something that we can find out. We don't need any God, and we don't believe anything which can't be proved by our methods. So this whole approach, bottom up, rather than we take, here we are, and the knowledge is beyond us, but we will research and then we'll bring it under us. This is the bottom-up approach to attaining knowledge, or that is climbing up. Avarohana Pantha. Sorry, Arohana Pantha, the climbing-up method. But our method of receiving knowledge is avarohana. We take knowledge that comes down. That knowledge of the universe and of everything eternally exists. That is called Veda. That is apaurusheya. Knowledge is knowledge. It exists independently of the existence of anything. And that is the Veda that eternally exists. Simply we have to accept that such knowledge exists and take it. So this is, we accept, we are very small, there is knowledge beyond our ability to find out simply by our mind and senses. We have to take that knowledge coming down. But the empiric or scientific approach is that we shall find out by ourselves. What a great job Darwin did. He found out by himself, by his own exercise of intelligence. Srila Prabhupada asked the question, who made Einstein's brain? He has such a great brain. Who has made that brain? Simply by chance, they will say. It came into... Well, some modern atheists say, no, it's saying by chance is too simplistic. It's not actually by chance. But if you take all the mumbo-jumbo out of their arguments, it's clear that the idea is that it all came into being by chance. So the idea is there also that those people who are more scientifically advanced, they're better, more technical. Nowadays, due to political correctness, it's supposed that all humans are equal. The animals didn't get equal rights. But all humans are equal. But it's quietly presumed that those who have more scientific and technological advancement, they are more advanced, they are better, which is one reason why countries like India are very eager to have big factories, chemical factories. And why does India want to send spacecraft out into the universe? Why? What are they, when they can't even provide water or for many of their citizens in the cities? They're living in the cities, but they can't provide a water supply. Why are they so? It's just to show. It's a prestige issue. They're willing to spend multi-crores of rupees, which could be better used for serving their own citizens, just to show that we're just as good as the other. We're an advanced nation. Because the idea is that if there's scientific expertise, that is a sign of advancement. Although Srila Prabhupada often pointed out that real advancement is advancement of true knowledge, spiritual knowledge, and the culture that goes with it. Real advancement is something completely different. To be detached from this world, that is actual advancement of human civilization. To be attached to it, either in a primitive way, or the very word primitive gives the idea that previously people were living without modern amenities, and now we are advanced. So, the idea that of living very simply, no, we should have a very complex life with many technologically produced advantages. But this civilization where we have many, so much technological advancement, but it becomes very complex. Just like, for instance, this city-state prides itself on being very developed, which certainly it is. But, maybe we can give the example of Britain. Britain, United Kingdom of Great Britain, and Northern Ireland, and Channel Islands, and so on. It's considered a highly advanced country, but it's dependent on imports of food. So it's for that very reason, it's in a strategically very vulnerable situation. A very complex civilization, which electricity is produced by bringing fuel such as coal from one place to another, and then burning it, and then generating electricity and sending it out in grids to different places. Recent events in Japan have shown that nuclear energy, which seems to be such a good option, maybe it's not so good after all. So there are many problems with this technologically advanced supposed civilization. According to the Vedic standard, real advancement is that one can live very simply and does not hanker after so many comforts. How can we live in an equatorial climate without at least electric fans? Of course, air conditioners are better. But previously, people lived very simply. But that is the Vedic ideal, to live very simply without having all these things, living very simply so that we can concentrate on spiritual cultivation. So Srila Prabhupada recommended this, that we establish Varnashram communities, live very simply. You don't have to have all these gadgets. For the body, we need food, clothing, and shelter. So these can be provided, especially in a climate like this. And just before I was here, we were in Sri Lanka, or South India. In such a climate, food can be produced without great endeavor. Some endeavor is required, without great endeavor, and materials for building to shelter from the heat and rain, that's also required. But that can be had locally also. Clothing, you don't require much in a climate like this, but that can also be arranged without much difficulty. So the Vedic ideal is not to endeavor for much material development, but to endeavor for spiritual development. The whole idea of a society that's making more and more progress, that we developed from apes, and now we're becoming more and more advanced. But as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, this is not real advancement. We don't need that, all these things. Our real advancement is advancement of spiritual consciousness. But one reason, there are several reasons why the knowledge of the Vedas, which Srila Prabhupada brought in its pure form, that means Vedaischa Sarvaraham Eva Vedyaha, Krishna is supreme. The knowledge that Krishna is the object of knowledge in the Vedas. One reason that people won't want to accept it is because it's ancient. They think, well, whatever we've discovered recently, that must be correct, because in ancient times people didn't really know what was going on. As we do more and more research, we get more and more real knowledge. And in the past, people used to think that if there's some famine or epidemic, that means because people are sinful and God is displeased. But nowadays we know that there are material causes. If there's an epidemic, it's caused by germs, not by God. People, because they didn't know about germs, they said it's all because we are sinful and God is punishing us. So they presume that everything ancient is not real knowledge. Well, maybe that's true in the Western world. But in India, although that's suppressed, there was knowledge of mathematics. You couldn't even do mathematics with the Roman system, with Roman numerals. You can't do it at all. Whatever crude mathematics they had, arithmetic, they had to use an abacus. You can't use Roman numerals for mentally doing mathematics. So that knowledge was there also, in Vedic knowledge. Advanced geometry, that was there. For making yajnas, there are so many requirements about the altar. The different altars, one might be in the shape of an eagle, and it has to be in specific proportions. How can you make it without knowledge of geometry? So knowledge of astronomy, we can use modern astronomical tables to ascertain what time tomorrow morning the sun will rise in Singapore. You can also use ancient Indian tables. That means they had the knowledge long ago. For instance, all fields, metallurgy, a sophisticated system of social organization that is much deprecated, what is called the caste system. But actually, it had advantages also. There was stability in society. There was not anxiety over what you have to be in future. Everyone was well trained for their job. There was no unemployment. These are very great advantages, whatever disadvantages may have been there. So, ancient knowledge, it's not only from India, the Vedic knowledge, but there is plenty of evidence of ancient civilizations all over the world, but that knowledge has been systematically stamped out by the so-called academic authorities or the academic orthodoxy. They don't want people to believe that there were advanced civilizations in the past, although there is tremendous evidence of it. Some of it has been offered in that book, Forbidden Archaeology, by Sadaputta Prabhu and Drutakarma Prabhu. And much more has been offered in many books by many researchers, but the scientific establishment won't accept it because it goes against Darwin's theory. And if we think that life is simply a combination of chemicals, then where does reincarnation come in? Where is the soul? Where is our responsibility for our actions? Actually, there is tremendous evidence which has been gathered in a scientific way in the West by Western scholars for reincarnation, but the scientific orthodoxy don't want to accept it. So this Darwin's theory is a great obstacle to accepting Krishna consciousness. It pervades practically every aspect of the modern way of thinking. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to train us in a completely different way of thinking. Srila Prabhupada was insistent that we have to accept Shastric knowledge. So you may say, why am I not talking about Krishna? Well, we can talk about Krishna. We should talk about Krishna. Definitely we should talk about Krishna. But even if we talk about Krishna in so many ways, if underlying our whole thought process is belief in everything we've been indoctrinated in since childhood, then we can't properly accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the message of Shastra to be true. Faith in the Darwinistic theories, unless it's uprooted and thrown out, it will remain as a permanent anartha that blocks our spiritual progress. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, the more we kick out Darwin's theories, the more we advance in spiritual consciousness. We may not even be aware of it, of how our whole way of thinking is adversely influenced by Darwin's theories, because we just accept it to be implicitly true, although it's a big hoax that the whole of modern society is running on. Modern society is running on a whole bunch of hoaxes. For instance, there are so many. Darwin's theory is one of the main ones. Another, interrelated, the idea that science is helping us make progress. Another is that the politicians all over the world, especially in the democratic world, they care for their citizens. Another hoax, what we see on the news is all true. What we're taught as history is true. It's all manipulated. There's so many hoaxes. And some people see through that and they want to replace the hoax, but they want to replace it with another kind of hoax. Because unless we come to the position of the truth, we remain in untruth. Someone may say, well, we want to change, have a revolution. But their revolution is, of course, revolution, when we think of that, we think of some violent activity, but revolution it doesn't necessarily mean that, of course. It can mean just like a revolution in the scientific world came about with Einstein's relativity theories. So there may be people calling for revolution, but they go from one materialistic ethos to another. So it's not really a revolution. Just like we can say Einstein's theories revolutionized science. Well, in one sense, definitely yes. But in another sense, science remained as materialistic as ever. So the revolution that Srila Prabhupada wanted to bring in was a revolution of consciousness. And the predominant minds or paradigm in contemporary society is one that is materialistic. I'm not saying atheistic, because materialism is a substrate of, and more insidious than atheism itself. Because atheism is mere denial of God, but materialism means a denial of even the possibility or even the question of God. If one is an atheist, at least they're admitting the possibility, there is a theory of theism which is to be opposed. But if materialism doesn't even, then there's no even question of discussing whether there's God or not God. So that comes about from Darwin's theory. So I'll say it again. The more we kick out Darwin's theories, the more we advance in spiritual consciousness. Srila Prabhupada said that to his disciples. So the understanding is that it's not simply by kicking out Darwin that we make spiritual progress. We have to practice Krishna consciousness also. Otherwise, there may be many religionists who also reject Darwin's theories, but they don't really have spiritual consciousness because they don't have the scientific knowledge, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, of Srimad Bhagavat that Srila Prabhupada kindly presented to us. So we should be very careful about what we hear and what we learn from sources other than Srila Prabhupada, actually. There may be people who say things which are true, but they may not be true also. So for us, Srila Prabhupada is the arbiter of all knowledge. He presented the Vedic knowledge. We accept him as the representative of Krishna in the modern age. There are many wrong theories which people just presume them to be true. Just like in Tamil Nadu, probably many of you are from Tamil background, as most of the people of Indian origin in Singapore and Malaysia are from Tamil background. So there's this whole idea of Dravidian. Dravidian versus Aryan. But this is all in... Who invented this idea? Who was it? Was it Karunanidhi or this... What's this? Periya? No, the British invented this, actually. Divide and rule. There was no such idea. All the Acharyas, Shankaracharya, he was also from, well, almost, well, yes, Dravida Desh, from what's now known as Kerala. So he never said any such thing. No one ever thought. He traveled all over India. No one said, hey, you're a South Indian. And even in India, there's no such thing. People can go here and there freely. But it was the British who invented this idea with the Aryan invasion theory. That when the British first came to India, they were surprised to find there was an extremely sophisticated culture, which in many ways was more sophisticated than their own. For instance, the modern science of linguistics in the Western world was started, they had no idea of any such science, but when they found it within India, the study of language, and they brought it to the West. So finding that extremely sophisticated culture, they wanted to undermine it and say that, well, actually, it all came from the West, originally. The Aryan people came from the West, and they invaded, and then they pushed the Dravidians down and into South India. A very poor theory when we consider that the South Indian languages are quite different from North Indian languages, but there are many words from Sanskrit in all of them, and in Tamil also, even though Tamil's been modified in recent years, but Sanskrit is the mother tongue from which all these languages have come. Finding so many Sanskrit words in European languages, the linguists have posited that there is a prototype Indo-European language from which Sanskrit and Latin and Greek and all these other languages came. They've never found any evidence of it whatsoever, of any people speaking such a language, or any trace of any such language, but they just can't bring themselves to admit or to postulate that actually Sanskrit is the mother of all languages. So it's this Aryan invasion theory was invented by the British for political purposes, and it's still going on, even though academically it's been disproved. But it serves a political purpose. And people tend to believe that. The academicians, they will ascribe, in studying Indian culture, they will ascribe base motives. Just like if we go through the Dashavatara, Nindasi yagya vidhera ha ha shuti jatam sadaya hridaya darshita pashu ghatam keshava dhrita buddha sharira jaya jagadisha. Buddha is included as the ninth avatar of Vishnu in the Dashavatara. But according to theorists, that Buddhism was a big problem for the followers of the Vedas, so they just made Buddha a Vishnu avatar, and in this way they incorporated Buddha into the Vedic culture. That's the kind of theories they come up with. We know about the Panchatattva, Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam Namami Bhakti Shaktikam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Garadha Shriva Sadi Gora Bhaktavrinda. So this understanding of the Panchatattva comes at the very beginning of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, Nityananda. This Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam, Bhaktarupa, Swarup is Bhaktarupa is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup is Nityananda, Bhaktavatara is Advaita. Bhakta Shakti is Gadadha, and Bhaktavataram Bhaktakyam, the one who is known as a Bhakta, is Srivas. So scholars say that, well, Krishnadas Kaviraj just made this up, because after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's disappearance, there were disagreements between the followers of Nityananda Prabhu and Advaita Prabhu, and there were all kinds of different groups. So they just gave everyone a place in the Panchatattva and made them all come together again. This is all bogus. They ascribed to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami some very some political motive in inventing the Panchatattva. Nonsense. Why should we accept such ideas? We accept Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami as... when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita in a devotional mood, we can appreciate here is a devotee on the highest level of God realization. He doesn't indulge in silly academic politics to try and fuse a scattering movement. But academicians, they will, because they have to come up with some mundane theory, they can't admit, they can't entertain within their minds the idea that actually someone could be spiritually advanced. They just presume that he has base motives. And in this way they make their commentaries. So we should be very careful of these so-called scholars and all these different theories. We should hear from the acharyas, those who are actually spiritually pure. Who can deny that Srila Prabhupada was a great transcendental spiritual personality? Who can deny? Every materialist has to deny. They may give Srila Prabhupada some kind of compliment that, yes, well, he did good work, he brought a lot of good to the world. He held the hippies who were in a bad situation, but they can only see his contribution in terms of how it helped people to get their lives together in this world. What is the social impact? Yes, Buddhism is very good. It helps to make people more calm and peaceful. They may say like this, but Buddha's aim was not to make people calm and peaceful per se. His aim was to show them the path to get free from the suffering of this world. But materialists, they refuse to accept that there is any spiritual dimension whatsoever. So we should be very careful not to be influenced by all these wrong ideas. But also we shouldn't become fanatical. As scholars, so-called scholars, they often accuse religionists of being fanatical. But fanatical means you just believe something with blind faith and you don't want to accept any reason. But Vedic culture is not meant to be like that. We talk about Bhagavad Gita, sometimes said the Hindu Bible. Well, it's not Hindu because there's no such word. The word Hindu came into being after Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita. And it's not the Bible either, because the Bible is presented as something that you're just supposed to believe in. But Krishna's presentation to Arjuna is not just do what I say and believe in it. If you believe, you're saved. If not, you're going to hell. Krishna never says such a thing. He says, Gyanam teham savijnanam idam baksham yaseshatah yajgyatva nehabuyo nyajgyatavyam avasishyate. He says that I will now explain to you knowledge of this world and the world beyond, by knowing which nothing else shall remain further to be known. And Arjuna, he's open, he's allowed to ask questions and express doubts, and Krishna explains to him. It's knowledge. There's a very great difference between the knowledge that is presented in Bhagavad Gita and the blind faith that's demanded in the biblical religions following the Bible. Of course, they do have some philosophy also, although the Bible itself is not a very philosophical work, but philosophy has been developed by people in these traditions. But that's basically, you're just supposed to believe it. So we should believe what Srila Prabhupada says, what the Shastra says, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. But that belief, that should not be simply blind faith. That, Gar se kaho hum Hindu hai. We're Hindus and we're best. That is foolishness. One should understand. Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karyam ivastita. One should know what is the message of Shastra. Gyatva shastram vidhanotam. Krishna says you should know what are the injunctions of Shastra. We should understand. Karyam karma hihahasi. One should act with understanding. So that is the difference. We reject Darwin, but it's not that just, we're ISKCON members, so we reject Darwin. But we should understand why we reject Darwin, why his theories are wrong, and why they should be rejected. Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please? Yes. The presence of God seems a simple fact to understand. It seems, you say that, actually I have a lecture planned on this subject, that why some people accept God. I saw one TED talk by an atheist who just started off saying that, well, we're not even going to discuss about whether there's God or not. It's just obvious. It's just nonsense. That was his proposition. the whole question of whether God or not exists or not is he dismissed it within the first 10 seconds of his speech. It's just nonsense. That's all. So for you say that it's obvious that there's God, and he says that it's obvious there's no God. So a lot depends upon our predisposition, piety or impiety, our association. Srila Prabhupada said, you bring anyone to me, I will prove there is God. That is the challenge he gave us in Parampara. We're not meant just for sitting in our own temples and having kirtan. We're meant for going out and challenging the wrong ideas by which the whole world is going to hell. In this regard, I've made a book. Do we have copies of that here now? It's called On Speaking Strongly in Srila Prabhupada's Service, giving all evidence as to why we should speak out on so many issues. With references from Srila Prabhupada. We're not meant just to ring the bells in the temple and smile. That we should do, but we should also give clear knowledge to human society, which they don't. Many people will not want to take it. So we have to give the message strongly, clearly, in a manner that cannot be refuted. So we should know all these things. You please, who's read Life Comes From Life? Really? We have 2, 3, 4, and myself 5, 6. Many of you have been associated with ISKCON for several years. It's a very important book. You should all read this. You should all read all of Srila Prabhupada's book. Otherwise, what's the meaning of being a follower of Srila Prabhupada? I'm going to say, Jai Srila Prabhupada. We don't have a clue what he taught us, what he wanted us to do. But then it becomes fanaticism. Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, read my books. So if you really want to know Srila Prabhupada, you should read his books. Hare Krishna. Any other point, question, comment, protest? Yeah.
So I'm from Tamil Nadu, so I can feel the reflections of this Dravidian versus Aryan.
You feel it in your consciousness, this Dravidian versus Aryan.
What is the common conception of people around? And they used to comment that Aryans invaded our home nation and then come, they came, they introduced this caste system, they called themselves Brahmanas, they divided the people like that.
Yeah.
They took the Shastras in their hands, the rules of God in their hands, and then they brought about this. And they used to say that Krishna is not our God, you know, our Tamil Nadu, our God is Murugan. You know?
Now they're making, they're using all of this and saying you don't need any of that, then you become a Christian.
Exactly, something like that. And then this prayer, and then when they came, they abolished this caste system in the name of social reform to say that all people are equal. So that seemed a bit more convincing for the common man to think that, okay, we are all equal, so we don't need to believe in this divisions in social order. Mm. And so we are Dravidians, and they are invaded and then changed our culture. So when we hear such a things, how do we really confront those questions?
What kind of arguments can you give against Periyar? Well, there are many. For instance, Well, the first thing is there's no evidence of this whatsoever. There's absolutely no evidence of an Aryan invasion. It's taught, but there's no evidence of it. Darwinism is also taught. There's no evidence of it. So it's actually for political reasons it was introduced. And modern politicians are using that also. The modern politicians will say that we're all equal, but they're making a lot more money than the people underneath them. Isn't it? How can you believe these politicians? In India, with maybe the exception of Aravind Kejriwal, he's yet to be seen, it's just understood that all the politicians are corrupt. There may be some others who are not corrupt. Maybe some of them are not, but or even it's said that the present Prime Minister is not corrupt, but if he is, he's keeping very bad company. It's just understood that these people, their motives are not simple, they're not to help the people. They have other motives. How can you trust them? This, I know in Salem, the DMK minister, he was just a rogue. He was the local MLA, and he was a complete rogue. You just take people's property by force, and how can you trust such people? This the worship of Rama and Krishna, it goes back deep into antiquity. There was no such idea, and there was no such idea of Aryan versus Dravidian. It's a new idea. Who made this up? Yeah. Well, one reason for that is because in North India there was more destruction from the Muslims. That's why there are more temples in South India. What is the result of this? Are people living more happily now? With all this political chaos brought in by this so-called democracy? The first question is that we're not the body at all. Isn't it? That's the first question. So why are you bringing this political divide, cultural divide? That's the first thing we should understand. If you're thinking in terms of Dravidian versus Arya, South Indian versus North Indian, that's on the bodily platform. But the body is temporary, the soul is eternal. That's not a question of belief. That's a fact that should be understood. You find that Shankara, he's from South India. Ramanuja's from South India. Madhva's from South India. Vallabh is from South India. They're all fully respected all over India. Shankara's influence has been more than any other in the last 1,000 years in India, more than 1,000 years. It's fully respected. No one says, oh, South Indian. Highly respected. His mats are there all over India. So that culture was there to respect knowledge and sadhus. It doesn't matter where they came from. Okay, so we'll finish there. Hare Krishna.